And welcome back, everybody, to the Morning Drive here, 102.5 The Game. John Roberts, Joe Rexroad with you. Marquise Munson, I have no idea what that song was, but I think it pertains, though. It's pertinent.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Okay. Sonic the Hedgehog.
That's actually classic.
That's actually a pretty good,
you know, I also,
good theme right there.
I also had to ask you guys what SMH was in the Twitter abbreviation world. Shake my head. I did not know that.
How about LMFAO? We can't say
I
that.
I know that.
Loud.
Yeah, okay. That one right. I know.
well, there's a brand new one that's out and about on the Twitter worlds, but we'll talk about that.
You can say the letters.
You can't say the letters? You can't even say
the
letters.
Well, we'll talk about it after.
Okay. I look forward to this one.
All right. Well, also look forward to every time we get a chance to speak with Adam Vingan from The Athletic about what's going on the ice. And Adam, first of all, I suspect that you knew what the theme song was that Marquise just played.
Yes.
Okay.
Marquise and I are in line, are in tune with our musical choices.
Yeah. Hey, so Adam, when it comes to Predators hockey right now, high payroll, high expectations, where do they go from here?
If I knew the answer to that, I'd be getting paid a lot more money, I think. And that's the question one has to ask when evaluating this team. Because as I wrote last week after they were eliminated, you know, they're in the worst place a team can be in professional sports, and that's just stuck in the middle. You know, they're not a team that I at least would consider a bona fide Stanley Cup contender anymore, but they're not a bad team either. I mean, they have a clearly talented roster, underperforming and underachieving, but clearly talented on paper. So that's the question that the management is going to have to ask itself, because there are no easy outs. They're tied into these long-term contracts that are big money contracts as well. The salary cap is remaining flat for next season and possibly beyond. You know, the Predators are in a bad way right now financially, I feel like. And in order for them to make significant change, they're going to have to do something, well, significant. What that is anybody's guess.
And we are going to sit here and guess and guess and guess, Adam, until David Poile pulls something that stuns us all. Do you think that's happening, by the way? Like, if we get to, I got to always adjust the month, you know, like I'm thinking like it's the start of the summer. The Preds are out of the playoffs, but of course we're talking well into the fall. So if we get to training camp and it's basically, you know, maybe Mikael Granlund has moved on, you know, we'll see. You know, maybe Craig Smith too. Some young guys are going to get more of a chance, but there hasn't been any sort of real fundamental change in the makeup of this team. How surprised would you be if that's the case?
I wouldn't be totally surprised, just because of the situation they find themselves in. I mean, you're right, Joe. I would not be surprised. I don't know if it would be the right thing to do, but I wouldn't be surprised if the changes that were made were just not re-signing the unrestricted free agents and putting youth in their place. So not re-signing Mikael Granlund, maybe not re-signing Craig Smith. You know, Dan Hamhuis, I would not be surprised if he retired. You know, re-signing Colin Blackwell to a league minimum deal. You know, not re-signing Yannick Weber or Carbinian Holzer, and then having players like Alex Carrier or Ellie Tolvanen or Philip Tomasino or Rem Pitlick in their places. And that does solve one issue. The Predators absolutely need to get younger. But will they be fundamentally changed for the better? I don't know if that's the case. I mean, we have come to know that the Predators are not shy about making a big move if it presents itself, but then you look at their roster, you look at the landscape of the NHL, the cap situation, and you wonder what that big move can be and what teams would be willing, you know, to take on those contracts.
If that is the case, because let's face it, largely in sports today we have hypotheticals. If that is the case, is it you or me or both writing an angry column? What do the fans think about it? And is there a chance, you know, because John Hines has a full preseason. He has done some things to improve things. We saw Ryan Johansson, the light come out from him. What kind of chance is there that that could still work and we could be talking about something different with this 2021 team?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible, but, you know, the fan base is PO'd. I understand what Ryan Ellis was saying or trying to say after the game last week about there being a new sense of belief and pride in the dressing room. And if that's the way they feel, that's good for them. But I think it was probably the worst possible thing he could have said in that situation. I think the fans took that as a sort of, we're resigned to the fact that we gave it our best and lost in the qualifying round to an 11 seed that hadn't made the playoffs in 8 years. I think we have reached a turning point, for lack of a better term, among the fan base of this team. I believe that this fan base has grown to expect more than what they've received. And I just have a feeling that this might be too strong of a word, but I have a feeling that if the Predators mostly return their same roster next year, the fans will revolt. The passionate fans of this franchise will revolt if there are not significant changes. And it's easy to sit here and say that, but just based on the comments on my stories, the interactions I have with fans on social media or otherwise, they're fed up with this group. And if they mostly return next year, if it's not a revolt, I think you might experience some apathy. I think we're getting to a point where there might start being fan apathy just because of, well, they keep doing the same things over and over again and expecting a different result, so why should we care?
Adam Vingan from The Athletic is on the morning drive. Adam, with the number 11 pick in round number one, we were speaking earlier about how sometimes it can be such an inexact science, a draft. You really don't know. I mean, you do your homework, you look into a player, you just don't know necessarily how they're going to translate. It's a gamble how they're going to translate. With the picks that are available, number 11 in round one, two picks in round two, two in round three, what can the draft do for this team?
Well, you know, it certainly would have been a lot better if they would have won the draft lottery the other night, and they could plan for the next 2 months to draft Alexis Lafreniere with the number one pick and have him immediately on the team. You know, number 11 picks, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, and there are people who are much smarter than I am when it comes to this kind of stuff. You know, but, you know, the likelihood of that number 11 pick being on the roster to start next season, I would say, are fairly slim. But they need to replenish their system with impact forwards. You have Philip Tomasino, who they drafted in the first round last year, who had 100 points in the Ontario League this past season. He looks like he's going to be a player. You know, he was among the training camp phase three group that the Predators put together before heading to Edmonton. I know the organization is high on him, but after that, there's a noticeable drop-off in forward talent in this system. And the Predators, historically, for as good as they've been churning out elite defensemen, cannot say the same about their forwards. So I certainly think, you know, having a first-round pick, you know, in the top half of the order, you know that second-round pick, that one of them comes from the New Jersey Devils as a result of the PK Subban trade, and the Devils were not good this year, so that pick will be near the top of the second round. So it's almost like another late first-round pick. So the Predators are in a good position that way to replenish their system. But in my personal opinion, I know that sometimes you're right. Drafting is an inexact science. And a lot of times teams will just go for the best player available, regardless of position. But in my opinion, it's imperative that the Predators use their first draft pick on a forward that can make this team better in the next few years.
There is also a Russian goaltender whose name I will not tread into. I mean, look, I've mastered Lafreniere. Thank you, Justin Bradford. But this brings me to another hypothetical you're going to love, Adam.
All right, let's hear it.
You ready? Who will be the Nashville Predators starting goaltender to start the 2023 season?
The 2023 season?
That's right. I said 2023. Man. Why not?
I think you know
what I'm driving at.
Yes. I have no reason right now to believe that it won't be UC Saros. And look, I know that he did not have statistically a great series against Arizona, but I think for a player, a 25-year-old who was starting his first playoff series, replacing a franchise legend who had started every playoff game for more than a decade, like, I think he did fine. I don't think, personally, and I've seen this among Predators fans, I don't think you can look at UC Saros' performance in four games and extrapolate that out to he's not ready yet, or he's not going to be a good starting goaltender. In the second half of the season under John Hines, he was arguably the best goaltender in the NHL. And yes, it was not a good series overall, statistically, but I want to see what UC Saros does as a full-time number one starter, presumably next season, before I make any big judgments as to how his career is going to pan out in that role. So, you know, the Predators have a good thing going, I feel like. UC Saros shows promise. I know that there are plenty of people who are high on Connor Ingram. So I think the Predators are in a good place in terms of their goaltending. I will also not attempt to pronounce the Russian goaltender's name that's supposed to be a first-round draft pick. But I don't think they need to use a top 11 draft pick on a goaltender right now.
Yeah, well, I thought maybe – I agree, and I think that's a very reasoned take on Saros. I thought you might say Connor Ingram, though, because some people think that maybe at some point here he could surpass Saros. And I think Saros was very good this year. He was fine in this postseason, and you're right. It's four games, and we're going to – all of a sudden just determine what he's going to do the rest of his career. I do wonder if he can reach the heights that you often need to reach in goal to make some of the runs, and one run in particular that Pekka Rinne allowed. But I think it's fair to say we still don't know yet.
Yeah, I think it's way too soon to say. I was very impressed with how he played in the second half of the season. And I know that you're going to look at his traditional numbers against the Coyotes. I know that you cited my friend Sean Tierney's graph a few days ago regarding goals saved above expectation, where UC Saros was the worst performing starting goaltender among those who played in the qualifying round. But I think it is a quantum leap. There's an 80s reference for you. A quantum leap. To say that because UC Saros had a iffy first playoff series that he is not made to be a starting goaltender in the NHL. I think that is a colossal stretch.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic, thank you so much for your time and your insight. Always great to talk with you, and hope to talk soon.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Adam. So let us grab a quick break here on the Morning Drive. When we come back, the far-reaching implications and just how far-reaching could they be of the recent developments in college football. This is 102.5 The Game, The Morning Drive.